Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save, and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine. And as always, it is a pleasure to be with you. Over the course of 2025, one in 10 Australians sought professional advice from a financial advisor, at least according to a report published by Advisor Ratings. Should you do the same, though? It's probably an avenue that many have considered. And it's also fair to assume that people in that position may have some questions about what to expect from the experience, or even if seeking advice might be an appropriate option at all. Well, that's what we're going to get into on today's episode of Friends with Money. We're going to get into some of the fundamental questions surrounding financial advice. And lucky for us, our guest is perfectly positioned to answer them. No pressure. So on that note, I'm very pleased to say that we are joined today by the Chief Executive of Financial Advice Association Australia, Sarah Aboud. Sarah, a very warm welcome to you. Thank you so much for joining us on Friends with Money.
No worries, Tom. Great to be here.
I'm so excited for today's episode. As we were saying off air, these are all questions that I would have myself. So I think that's always a good start. So anyway, we've got lots to get through. So let's get cracking. To start off with, Sarah, from your position, why do you think it's important for Australians to consider financial advice? And I guess, do you think the role, or I guess the relevance of advice has changed at all in recent years?
Well, I mean, to start us off, I guess the key reason why we think financial advice is so important is that it makes you better off. And there's plenty of research and so on to support that. We run a regular research exercise called the Value of Advice Research, and that is really consistently finding that people who have sought financial advice are not only better off financially, but they feel better off. They're mentally healthier. They're more confident about the future. They feel happier about achieving their financial goals. So the benefits are really, really clear. I think the other reason why we need financial advice, particularly in Australia, is that we have such a complex financial system. You know, we've created a world-leading superannuation system, for example, that's the envy of many other countries around the world. But I don't think anyone would say that it was simple and clear, to put it mildly. So there's a lot of opportunities out there that can help people, and a lot of decisions that you can make that are, you know, contextually not that hard, but people are often just simply not aware of what opportunities there are out there, what decisions they could make that would put them in a better position. And financial advice obviously is the way that you can help get access to that and make sure that you're benefiting from what's out there. Your question, you also covered, I guess, a bit of context around has advice changed, or has the context changed? Mm-hmm. And I think the key thing that's changed in advice is that it has become a profession in the last 7 years. And that means that rather than operating for a financial product provider or someone of that nature, a financial advisor operates for the client. So if you engage an advisor, you pay the advisor and they're working for you. So their job is not to place the products of a company, it's to make you better off. And that's been formalized in law. Financial advisors have a best interest duty, which is in legislation, that is a legal requirement to prioritize the interests of their clients, act in the best interests of their clients. Also, now to become a financial advisor, you have to have a degree in financial advice and financial planning. You have to pass a national exam. You have to do a full professional year. So the requirements are very similar to the requirements to become a lawyer or an accountant, for example. So that's been a big shift, and that's only happened in the last 7 years. Might sound like a while, but it's the blink of an eye in legislation terms. So that's been a huge change. And if you go sit down with a financial planner now, they're working for you. They're not working for someone else.
I think that's a great point to stress, Sarah, and it probably kind of clears up some perhaps misconceptions that people may have about advice that there might be from years or decades past. So good to really stress that. there's often this perception that advice is for people who, you know, are approaching retirement or who are already well into their working lives at the very least. So I'm interested to hear what you think the case is for younger Australians to seek advice though.
Yeah, look, I do hear that a bit, and my enormous frustration is I'm no longer 21. But for people who are, you know, you have such a huge advantage right now, and that is time. You know, that is the biggest asset that you can have in investing. Most people have heard of compound interest, but it's not that simple. That's one of the advantages. If you put a little bit of money away now, it's going to make a huge difference to the future. The other key decision you can make now that will leave you far better off in the future is to have the right investment mix in your superannuation. You know, most younger people, anyone who's working, by and large, will have superannuation. Most young people are not that engaged with it because they get grumpy. They think, oh, I'd rather have that money to spend now. I need it now. I'm not going to get it till I'm 65 and that's really old. And, you know, it's hard to throw your mind forward to care about what 65-year-old you is going to be like and what their needs are going to be. But if you were to make a decision to just put a small amount of extra money into your super and ensure that you are in an option that has higher growth, which is generally the right decision for a younger person, you're going to have a six-figure difference at retirement, an enormous difference in how comfortable you're going to be and the amount of money that you're going to have access to. And you will care a lot, I can guarantee you that, when you get to there. Nobody wants to be eating cat food when they're old, but it's hard to envisage that when you're younger. But that is the huge advantage. That is the thing that every older person is jealous of every younger person for having, is that time to put your money away, to invest it in assets that are going to deliver, generally speaking, a better return over the longer term and leave yourself substantially better off just by making those small decisions. The other big advantage you have generally is good health. So if you are in a position where you are in a relationship, you have a dependent or something of that nature, you're far more likely to be able to get the right level of insurance cover that's going to protect you and your family when you're younger. As you get older, it gets much more expensive and much harder to access. So if you can make a couple of key decisions when you're younger to get yourself on the right track, that's often all you need to do for quite a long period of time. And yeah, that's the huge case, I guess, for engaging with financial advice and to make sure that you've got a couple of simple things sorted. So I've mentioned, what are you saving? What are you invested in? Do you have the right level of cover? And I'll probably add cash flow management and budgeting. Get those four things sorted out. It's not that difficult. It's going to make a massive difference over the course of your life.
When I've read about, you know, investors who are asked to look back and talk about, you know, regrets that they have throughout their journey, it's always or so common to get an answer, which is, I just wish I'd started earlier, or yep, I wish I'd got some different advice earlier. So that makes complete sense to me. Sarah, age aside, is there a level of wealth or an income level or perhaps, I guess, a level of financial complexity that someone would need to have to really benefit from advice?
Yeah, look, I don't think so, Tom. You know, what we've talked about are ways that an everyday average younger Australian could absolutely benefit and benefit a lot from financial advice. It does depend a little bit on what you want. And it also depends, of course, on the advisor that you engage, because there's a lot of different business models, different advisors out there. Some of them will absolutely have minimum amounts of assets or minimum amounts of income and so on that they will look for before they'll engage with you. And partly that's because, you know, as a professional, you can't act for someone if the fee that you have to charge them to advise them is going to be greater than the value that you can add. That's not what professionals do. But because there are so many different business models out there, there's no one answer to that question. And I think the key thing, I think, before you engage a financial advisor is to try and get clear on it, what it is that you want. You know, are you just looking for comfort that you're taking advantage of everything that you can, that you're getting access to all of the strategies and options that are out there that can benefit from. It might be a life event, like you might have inherited some money or started a relationship, ended a relationship, acquired a dependent, something like that. So often a first engagement is around a life event, and that leads you to think about, okay, what do I need now to help make sure that this next phase of my life is going to work out well and I'm going to achieve my goals? So sorry I don't have a definitive answer for you, Tom, but off the top of my head, I can't think of anyone who wouldn't benefit from financial advice. The caveat that I will enter is if someone has got themselves into real trouble with debt or gambling or something of that nature, financial advice is probably not what you need first. What you need first is a service called financial counselling. And those are people who are very experienced and adept at helping people who are in a bit of a mess. There can be a lot of reasons for that. It happens, right? It can happen in business. It can happen through ending relationships and so on. But there is, unfortunately, a lot of people who do have a lot of debt, and there are financial counsellors that can help you manage that and dig yourself out of that hole. Once you've done that, then financial advice is the next step.
And on that note, you've teed me up very well. Anyone interested in listening to a bit more, an episode that covers what they can expect from a financial counsellor, can go and listen to episode 90 of Friends with Money, which I was very rudely searching for as you were giving the end of that answer, Sarah, because I was thinking, we've definitely done this before. I should find out which episode that was. Very quickly, before we kind of get into the kind of process and the nuts and bolts of seeking advice, can you give us even a ballpark figure of what people can expect in terms of costs? And I'm imagining it's going to, you know, as you've been saying, it's going to vary depending on the individual's needs and also the advisor that they go to.
Yeah, look, it will. There are a lot of different surveys out there of the average cost of advice. I had a look at one not long ago that put that answer at $4,700. And that was from an organization called Advisor Ratings. It's a big figure, without a doubt. And that number is obviously out of reach for many Australians, but it's an average. So there'll be as many fees below that level as there are above that level. And the other point, of course, is that advisors charge differently. So there are some who will have a minimum fee and will just say, look, this is the minimum because I can't advise you for less than that because of the sort of business that I'm running and the sort of clients I'm well set up to serve. There are others who will charge based on the assets that you hold. Some will charge based on the complexity of your affairs. Some charge a fixed fee based on the sort of engagement that you're looking for. There are a lot of different models out there, and that is a really important question to ask, by the way. I think we'll get into, you know, if you're thinking about finding a financial advisor, how do you do that? But this is definitely an early question to ask, and you need to know exactly what that number is and what's leading to that as part of your engagement of a financial planner. You need to be confident that you're going to get value out of that, and that value added is going to be greater than the fee. Otherwise, clearly there would be no point in engaging a financial advisor.
Absolutely. I think that's a totally fair answer, Sarah, and it gives people an idea of what they can expect in terms of the different structures. I mean, that's important as well, beyond the dollar figure. As you said, it'd be great to get into a little bit about what people should actually look for in an advisor themselves beyond, as you said, that the kind of fee structure or the costs involved. So what should people be looking at? Are there any kind of, I guess, green flags or red flags that people should be looking out for as well in their search?
I guess the first point is make sure they really are an advisor. So financial advisor and financial planner are now controlled terms. It's not legal to call yourself one of those two things unless you actually qualify to do so. There is a public register that ASIC runs on its MoneySmart website called the Financial Advisor Register. You can go into that, you can type in their name and see if they're there. And there's a couple of reasons that's important. And one of them, of course, is that to get onto that register, you have to have gone through a pretty rigorous process of education. You have to be doing 40 hours per year of continuing professional development. You have to be licensed by an organization that's happy with the advice that you provide. So it's not easy to do that. But the other reason it's important, not only have they got the knowledge to advise you, if something goes wrong, you have protection. So if you are in this system where you're engaged with a licensed professional advisor and something goes wrong, let's say they're negligent or they give you bad advice and blow you up, you have recourse. So you can make a complaint to an external body called AFCA and make the case that, you know, this advisor did the wrong thing and they've cost you money and you should get that money back. Even if that financial advisor firm has gone bankrupt, there's a scheme called the Compensation Scheme of Last Resort that you can potentially access that can cover you for up to $150,000 if you have a complaint against an advisor and their firm's gone bankrupt. Now, I'd certainly hope that nobody listening to this would ever have called to do that, but I think it's reassuring to know that you're dealing with someone who's got the knowledge and the support to advise you, and if something goes wrong, there's some backup there. So if you're dealing with someone who isn't licensed, who doesn't have all of those protections, then you're on your own if something goes wrong. And unfortunately, people do lose money in the investing space. They lose money to scams. There's all sorts of schemes going around. Social media is kind of notorious for having lots of kind of fake ads, and there's high-pressure sales tactics engaged in by some providers out there. So that is one way to really sort out the wheat from the chaff and make sure that the person you're dealing with is legit. The other thing I will say, as you would expect, is that your advisor should be a member of a professional association. It's not compulsory to be a member of a professional association. So the other place you can go is our website called Find a Planner on the FAAA website, and you can look up planners based on where they're located, what languages they speak, male or female, what do they specialize in. So there's a lot of options there to try to narrow down someone that you think you would work well with and would help you. And by being a member of a professional association, you get that extra level of scrutiny. These planners who are members of ours sign up for an additional code of conduct and so on. So you've got an extra layer of protection there. I think those tips are important because there's no big institutions in advice anymore. Like, people would remember the Royal Commission, no doubt, certainly burned into the psyches of everybody who's in this financial services space. All of the banks exited retail financial advice, which is the sector we're talking about, and large institutions as well. So you don't really have a big brand like a CommBank or someone that you can trust and look for. Financial advisors are generally working in quite small businesses, and you may not know the brands that they're working under. So knowing that they have these protections around them, I think, is really, really important. So that is kind of the starting point, right? But once you've got someone, or access to ways you can search that ensure that you're dealing with people who are legit, then it's really important that you get on with and rate the person. So I would say, don't just engage with someone you've just kind of fallen over on social media or got introduced to at a barbecue or whatever. Do some research, and I would say definitely shop around as well. There are many different business models out there, many different types of advisor. You need to make sure you're choosing to deal with someone who's got the right skills for you, who can advise you in the ways that you need to be advised, but you also need to trust them because you are giving them a lot of information about who you are, your family, your goals and aspirations. It's a pretty personal relationship, so it's really important that you're engaging with someone who feels right for you.
That's an excellent point, Sarah. I'm thinking back to conversations I've had with advisors over the years, and I definitely think of some of them and think, yeah, I would trust them. They're good people, so I can see why the rapport and that personal side is important to think about as well.
Tom, can I just add one? Because I think you asked about red flags as well.
Yes, please. Red flags are also important.
The main red flag is if they're trying to sell you a product before they even know who you are, run a mile. There are plenty of people out there who want your money. You've got to be sure that they're someone that you want to give your money to. That's going to be a good decision. A good financial advisor will spend a lot more time asking you questions, listening to the answers, trying to get to know you. If they're trying to sell you something right at the start, that is a massive red flag. So where we've seen problems in our sector, it's usually trying to sell a product that's actually not good for the person that they're talking to. And no matter what client they engage with, the answer is always the same product. So that is definitely not what you want from your advisor. So that, I would say, is the biggest single red flag.
Makes a lot of sense to me. Sarah, once someone has found an advisor, what can they expect from the process itself? So what, I guess, typically happens in that first meeting and then over time as that relationship develops, if it develops, that is?
In most cases, the first meeting is to see if there's a fit. Like, are you the right sort of client for that advisor? Is that advisor the right sort of advisor for you? So, you know, I mentioned before that really what you should be looking for is someone who's asking you questions. Why are you here? Tell me about your goals. Tell me about your situation. You know, it won't be super detailed. Generally speaking, you won't have to like produce last year's tax return in the first meeting. But it's intended to ensure that there's a good fit, because if it's not a good fit, it's not going to work for you or for the advisor. And from the consumer's point of view, you should have a list of questions and take it to the meeting. As I said, shop around. I would say meet at least three advisors before you make your final decision, and make sure that you're comfortable with how they work and how they charge and who they seem to be as an individual. There's a list of questions on the Money Smart website. We've got a bunch of articles and blogs on the FAAA website as well. So there's lots of sources you can go to get what are the list of questions you should be asking. And I would definitely recommend doing that research. And don't be afraid to ask. I think it's sometimes a barrier for people. They feel, oh, I feel like I don't really understand enough about finance. I feel embarrassed. I feel like I should know more. And that's absolutely not the right mindset to take into that. Not only are you exactly like 99% of the rest of Australia, nobody really knows a lot about this space, right? But you know you, and you know what success looks like and means for you. And if you're going to pay someone to give you financial advice, then you absolutely need to be asking them questions to make sure that they're the right person for you. If you feel that you don't have a lot of background or education or financial literacy, then you're probably looking for an advisor who can help you there and who is a good communicator and who can explain complex terms simply and so on. If you are, you know, in financial services and an expert in portfolio construction, you know, yourself, you might be looking for something else from your advisor. You might be looking for someone to challenge you or someone to advise you in other areas that you're not comfortable with yourself. But yeah, don't ever feel that you feel embarrassed by asking what might seem like simple questions, because they're what you need to know. And you're in the driver's seat. You know, you're the prospective client.
And so going forward, Sarah, say I get on well with an advisor and the first meeting goes well, how often do people, I guess, typically go back to their advisor? Is it like a yearly check-in? Is it up to the individual how often they want to engage and the questions they have? Or is there no kind of typical format for ongoing advice and that ongoing relationship?
Yeah, look, Tom, that's a really good question to ask the advisor, because there are some that, and particularly those that specialize in the investment management portfolio construction kind of side of it, and a big part of their value proposition to you is managing your assets, then they will often have an annual review structure. And a lot of what you might talk about is, you know, how's things going? Is the US share market a bubble? What do we think AI is going to do? Do we like gold? Do we like, you know, that those sorts of conversations probably need to be had on a semi-regular basis, because things change a lot. But if you're engaging an advisor to help you with structure and strategy and so on, and you've got an investment strategy that's somewhat set and forget, it might not be an annual review. It might be you call us if you're from the advisor's perspective, if something changes for you, they will probably check in with you at least every couple of years. But that ongoing review service has a fee attached to it. So, you know, you need to be comfortable and confident that that fee is appropriate and you're getting value for it. Some advisors work on every couple of years. Some advisors are episodic and they'll see you if there's a need and not see you if there's not a need. So again, there's a lot of different options out there, and it's important to choose an advisor that's happy to do business on the basis that works for you.
I feel like we've gotten through so much already today. So one final question, Sarah, and it's a bit of a meta one as well. For anyone listening who's thinking about seeking financial advice for the first time, what's the most important piece of advice you'd give them before they take that first step, whether it's something that you've already mentioned today or whether it's something that we haven't gotten to just yet?
I think it's you be in the driver's seat. You make the decision. So for a lot of people, you know, that they'll start a relationship because they stumbled over someone, you know, on a podcast or online, or as I said, got introduced at a barbecue. There's lots of different ways that you can come across advice. And the other big trigger is something's happened in your life that's major, that has impacts on your finances. But make sure that you're choosing the advisor who's right for you. The person that you're stumbling over might not be the right person. So treat it as a project and say, this is an important decision. Getting this right is going to make a big difference to my future. So I'm going to go have a look for someone that I think is the right person for me. So look, as I said, in sources like the Money Smart website. I mentioned the FAAA website. There's a website called Advisor Ratings. So there are a couple of sites out there where you can go and browse and have a look at different financial advisors and get a sense of who's out there. But I think the biggest single piece of advice is, once you've made a decision to do it, actually do it is obviously the next one, and be considered and deliberate and make sure you're in the driver's seat and you're choosing someone who's really right for you.
I think that's an excellent, excellent place to leave off for today then, Sarah. This has been such a great episode. You've answered a lot of the questions that I had myself, and I'm sure questions that our listeners had too. So many thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and we'll very much look forward to having you back on in the future if you're ever keen.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast. Don't forget to jump on our website, moneymag.com.au, for your daily dose of financial news, or you can go grab yourself a copy of the latest edition of Money Magazine in all good newsagents. As always, Friends with Money will be right back in your podcast feed next week. So until then, my name is Tom Watson. Goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.